Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India, Discourse Number 10.
The first question. Do wisdom and understanding increase gradually, or do they come as explosions? Understanding never comes, neither as a sudden phenomena nor as a gradual one, because it is always there. You have it right now. It is not going to happen somewhere in the future. You are carrying it within you, just as a seed carries the tree. A woman carries a child. You are carrying it right now. Now it depends on you. If your intensity is total, you will achieve it suddenly. If your intensity is not total, you will achieve it by and by in steps. But understanding never comes to you. You are understanding. Enlightenment is not something that happens to you. You are enlightenment. Remember this. Then it is choice, your choice. If you desire totally, in that fire of total desire, all that covers that understanding burns. Suddenly, the light is there. But it is up to you. It is not part of the nature of enlightenment to happen gradually or to happen suddenly. Don't throw the responsibility. That's how people create philosophies in schools. In Japan, two schools of Zen exist. One believes in sudden enlightenment, another believes in gradual enlightenment, as if these are the qualities of enlightenment, as if they belong to enlightenment. They don't belong to enlightenment. Enlightenment is always there. It is for you to choose. If your desire is total, not even a single moment is lost. But if your desire is not total, that means you yourself are not willing it to happen right now. You want to postpone it. You want it tomorrow, some other day. Then you go on playing tricks. If you are really sincere, there is no time gap. It can happen this very moment. A single moment even is not to be lost, because it is already the case. One has just to look within. But if you don't want it right now, then you can wait for millennia. I would like to tell you an old story. It happened in Ceylon. There was a great Buddhist master. For almost 80 years, he taught his disciples. When he was 120, he told one day that now I am going to die after 7 days. So thousands of his disciples gathered for his last darshan, to see him for the last time. The old man, before closing his eyes and dissolving within words, asked them if somebody wants to accompany me. If somebody wants nirvana, enlightenment right now, then he should simply raise the hand and that will do. People knew that he was a man of word. And he was not joking. He has never joked in his whole life. He was a serious man. He means, if he says. They started looking at each other. Thousands of people and not a single hand was raised. One man stood up and he said, "Please don't misunderstand me. I don't want to accompany you right now because there are many things to be done. I have many things to fulfill, pass through many things, many karmas to be accounted. As yet I am not ready for it, but someday I would like to be enlightened. Can you give some key hints for it? Because you will be no more here." And the man has been giving key hints for his whole life for 80 years. Still, they want something to be said about it so that they can postpone and plan and think about the future. And the old man was ready. If somebody was ready, he was ready to take him with himself. But nobody was ready. People are cunning because the mind is cunning. And the greatest cunningness of the mind is it always throws responsibility on something. If enlightenment is gradual, then what can you do? Nothing can be done. It is gradual, it will take long time. If enlightenment is sudden, then why it has not happened to you? You will ask, then why it has not happened to me if it is sudden? No, it cannot be sudden. And if it is sudden, and there is not any need to do something for it to happen, then what can be done? I will wait. Whenever it happens, it happens. You simply want to escape from the responsibility of your own choice. Sartre has said one thing really beautiful. He said, man is free to choose, but man is not free not to choose. You can choose either way, but don't be befooled. You have no freedom not to choose. Because even when you think you are not choosing, you are choosing the opposite. A man came to me and he said, "I am not yet ready for sannyas. 70%, 80% I am ready, but 20% I am not ready. So how I can take sannyas? I am not total." So I said, "Okay, but still you are choosing. And now you are choosing a minor part of your mind. The 20% says don't take. Now you are choosing the 20% against the 80%. So don't think that you are not choosing. That's not possible. You have to choose whatsoever you do. Even if you don't choose, you must be choosing. Choice is there. One is free to choose, but one is not free not to choose." And the mind says, it is gradual. It is a choice. And the mind says, it is sudden. That too is a choice. When you say it is sudden, you would like to drop every effort, then you choose sudden enlightenment. Then there is no need to do it. When it happens, it happens. Nothing can be done because it is the sudden thing. Just like lightning in the sky, whenever it happens, it happens. You cannot make preparations for it. It is not like electricity in the house that you put it on and off. It does not depend on you. It is a sudden phenomenon. When it happens, it happens. You have to wait for it. If you are thinking to read a telegram when the electricity happens in the sky, then you have to wait. When it happens, you can read. What can you do? People who want to escape from effort will choose sudden enlightenment. People who want to escape from the great total responsibility of it, that it can happen right now, will choose the philosophy of gradualness. I don't say anything about enlightenment. I am saying something about you. It is for you to feel your desire. Total desire, enlightenment is sudden. Partial desire, enlightenment is gradual. It has nothing to do with the nature of enlightenment. Remember this. Second question. Do Taoists, with the happening of sudden enlightenment, do Taoists agree with the happening of sudden enlightenment or the gradual one? They don't bother. Lao Tse does not bother. Because Lao Tse says just to be ordinary is to be enlightened. It is not something special that one has to achieve. It is not an achievement. It is not something that one has to reach. It is a you. In your absolute ordinariness, it flowers. Because only to be extraordinary is the disease of the ego. The ego always wants to be extraordinary, someone special, unique, incomparable. That is the hankering desire of the ego. If you can become a Rockefeller, good. If you can become a Hitler, good. Or if you cannot become a Rockefeller or a Hitler, then renounce the world. Think of becoming a Buddha. But become someone. Someone special. A historic phenomenon. Lao Tse is not bothered about enlightenment and all that nonsense. He says, just be ordinary. Eat while you feel hungry. And drink when you feel thirsty and go to sleep when sleep comes. Just be as natural as the whole existence. And suddenly, there is everything in all its glory. Nothing is needed. To be ordinary is the most extraordinary state of being, because the ego dissolves. Ego is subtle. You leave it from one direction, it comes from another. You push it out from one door, go inside the room, it is sitting on the throne. It has entered from another. Before you ever reach in, it is already there. I had a friend, and he had a small cat, very beautiful cat. He asked me what names he should give to the cat. I called the cat Ego, because ego is very cunning, and cat, of course, is cunning. There is nothing like cat. So he named his cat Ego. But by and by he got fed up. He was a lonely man, a bachelor, with no wife, no children. And he wanted always to be alone, but the cat was a continuous disturbance. He will be sleeping and she will jump on his chest. And she will come with blood marks on her paws and destroy the whole seat or his clothes, because she was continuously hunting the mice. And it was become a trouble. So I told him, ego is always a trouble. You go and throw it. So he said, but she knows all the ways of the town. She will come back. You go to the forest. So he went to the forest. Just so that the cat cannot find the way, he went in and lost the way. Then there was only one way. He left the cat and followed her and came back home. Because that was the only way, there was nobody else to ask. The cat came as certain as an arrow, not even hesitating for a single time which way to follow. So I told him that your cat is perfectly has the quality of the ego. You cannot throw it easily. Wherever you go to throw it, you will come home, it is already there. Or sometimes you may get lost and then you will have to follow it, because only she knows the way. The ego is very wise in her cunningness. Lao-tse does not give for the ego any foothold, any ground to stand. So he does not talk about enlightenment. So if you meet Lao-tse, don't ask him that, do you believe in sudden enlightenment or in gradual enlightenment? He will not answer you. He will laugh at you that what foolishness. There is no need for any enlightenment. That word doesn't occur. That is not part of Lao-tse's vocabulary. He's very simple. He said, just be ordinary. Why this hankering to be extraordinary, to be someone? Now, you cannot be someone in the world and become enlightened at least. But why? Why you can't be satisfied and content with yourself as you are? If you ask me, to be content with oneself as one is enlightenment. It is nothing, something special, as the yogis has made it, kundalini rising, light sowing, inner experiences, angels and gods, and this and that. This is all nonsense if you understand it. Enlightenment is nothing of this sort. All these things, kundalini and the light and the God and the angels and the heaven and the hell, are part of the magician's bag. You want them, he immediately produces, he supplies. You create the demand and the magician supplies the things to you. You want something special, he gives it to you. He lives, he exploits you. He lives on your absurd desires. Lao-tse is absolutely simple. He has no bag. He says, why not just be? What is wrong? What is wrong in that which you are? Why make an effort? And who will make the effort? You will make the effort. Your effort cannot go beyond you. And whatsoever you will do, you will do. How can it go beyond you? How can it be transcendental? By your own efforts, how can you transcend? It is not possible. You are trying to do the impossible. You can go on jumping thousands of your lives and nothing will be attained. Accept yourself. That is the only reality there is. That is the only possibility there is. Accept yourself as you are. And suddenly everything is transformed. Acceptance is the word for Lao Tse, not enlightenment. Total acceptance, whatsoever the case is. Nothing is, nothing else is possible. It is how things are. It is how you have happened into this vast universe. This vast universe wanted you to be like this. Now you accept. The only two choices are available. Either you reject yourself or you accept yourself. If you reject, then there are again two possibilities open. You reject in a worldly way or you reject in a otherworldly way. If you reject yourself in a worldly way, that means you would like to be more beautiful than you are. You would like to be more strong than you are. You would like to be more rich than you are. You would like to be a bigger house than you have. This is to reject in a worldly way. If you reject yourself in an otherworldly way, the religious way, that means you would like to attain satori, samadhi, enlightenment, nirvana. You would like to become a Buddha. You would like to possess God. You would like to live in infinite bliss. Now this is how you reject in a religious way. These are both rejections and both are wrong. For Lao Tse, both are equally absurd. Your marketplace is a marketplace. Your temple is also part of it. Your this worldly desires are worldly desires. Your other worldly desires are also desires and worldly. In fact, there cannot be any other worldly desire. Desire itself is this worldly. Desire means this world. I would like to tell you an anecdote. It happened in a Sufi's life. A great mystic, living silently by his own self. One day suddenly he was awakened by a messenger from God. And the messenger says that your prayers have been accepted. Now, the Supreme Being, the Creator, is very happy with you. You can ask. Whatsoever you desire will be fulfilled. You ask and immediately it will be fulfilled. The mystic was a little puzzled, but he said, "You came a little late. When I needed things, when I had many desires, you never came. Now I have no desires. I have accepted myself. I am totally at ease at home. Now I don't bother even whether God exists or not. I don't pray to Him. I pray because it feels good. I have stopped thinking about Him at all. My prayer is not addressed to anybody anymore. I simply pray as I breathe. It's so beautiful. Whether God exists or not, it is irrelevant. You came a little late. Now I have no desire." But the angel said, "This will be an offense against God. When He says you can ask, you have to ask." The man was puzzled. He shrugged his shoulders. He said, "But what to ask? Can you suggest anything?" because I have accepted everything and I am so fulfilled. At the most, you go and tell God that I am grateful, give my thanks to Him. Everything is as it should be. Nothing is lacking. Everything is perfect. I am happy, blissful. And I don't know anything about the next moment. This moment is all. I'm fulfilled. You go and tell my thanks. But the angel was stubborn. He said, no, you will have to ask anything. Just as a mannerism, be a little understanding. Then the man said, then if you insist, then tell God that keep me as desireless as I am. Give me only one thing, desirelessness, acceptability. They both mean the same thing. Desire means the rejection of something. You would like to be something else. Desirelessness means acceptance. You are happy as things are. In fact, things are irrelevant. You are happy. You are happy. That's the point. Lao Tzu says, be content as you are. Nothing else is needed. And then suddenly, everything happens. In deep acceptance, the ego disappears. Ego exists through rejection. Whenever you reject something, ego exists. Whenever you say no, ego strengthens. Whenever you say yes, a total yes to existence. That is the greatest meditation one can enter into. In all other meditations you can enter, but you will have to come out. This is the only meditation in which you enter and you cannot come out. Because once you enter, you are no more. Nobody can come out of it. Third question. You have said that any question is violent, but yet we are encouraged to ask questions. Why is this? Because you are violent and you need catharsis. You have questions to ask. You may not have the courage to ask. That's why you are encouraged. You have questions to ask. You have to pass through that. Ask them. I'm not saying that my answers will destroy them. No. My answers are not pointed that way. My answers have a totally different purpose. They will make you aware that all questions are useless, futile, absurd. I would like you to come to a point when the mind stops questioning. But that you cannot do because you are full of questions. Release them, don't suppress them. Be courageous. Even if you know that they are foolish, don't hide them. Because if you hide them, you will never be able to get rid of them. Even if they are ridiculous, all questions are. And I am not really answering your questions. Your questions cannot be answered. Your questions are like a person who is in a delirium. The fever has gone very high. He is reaching 108, 109. 110. And then he is in delirium. Then he sees everything is moving. The table is flying in the sky. And he asks, where this table is going? What to say to him? Whatsoever you say will be wrong, because the table is not going at all. And you cannot convince the man that the table is not going anywhere. It is just in the room, not moving at all. That will not convince him, because you cannot convince anybody against his own experience. How can you convince anybody against his own experience? Conviction is possible when his own experience supports it, otherwise not. He is seeing that the table is flying, trying to get out of the window. The table has wings. Not only the table, the cart he is lying on, that too is jumping and getting ready. Getting ready to take off. How can you convince a man who is in a delirium? If you try to convince him, you are also mad. Only a mad doctor can try to convince. You know what the doctor will say? You don't be worried, the table will come back. We will bring it back, don't be worried. We will do something. The doctor will try to bring his temperature down. When the temperature comes down, the table will come down by itself. When the temperature becomes normal, the table is in its place. It has always been there. It has not moved a single inch. That is the situation. I see. I know that you are in a delirium. And this delirium is very subtle. No temperature measuring device can measure it. It is inner, not a physical temperature. Inside you are in a delirium. Then questions and questions and questions. Like flies, they go on and on. I help you to ask and even encourage you to ask just to get rid of them. This is a catharsis. This is part of a meditation. Listening to me, by and by you will come to a point when you will understand that all questions are futile. In fact, questioning is useless. When this realization arises in you, you will have a total change of attitude. Then questions disappear. When all questions disappear, then arises the answer. And remember well, there are not as many answers as you think there are questions. There is only one answer to all questions. Questions may be millions. The answer is one. There is only one answer, the answer, and that is self-knowledge. So I am helping you to become aware. There is a Sufi story. Few men were passing from a Sufi monastery. Just curious, they came to see what is happening there. People were doing catharsis, freaking out, screaming, jumping, going completely mad. Those travelers thought, this is a mad monastery. We were always thinking that people go to attain enlightenment there, and these people have gone mad. And the master was sitting amidst this catharsis, this mad chaos all around him. In the midst of it, he was sitting silently. The travelers thought that why the master is sitting silent, someone from the group suggested maybe he is too tired. He may have done this madness too much. Then they were coming back, work done. They were coming back to their town. Again they passed the monastery. It was after a few months. They again looked what happened to those mad people. But now everybody was sitting silently. Not even a single word. When they approached the monastery, they became afraid that have those people left? Because there seems to be nobody now. When they came in, everybody was there, but they were silently sitting. Then after a few months, they were again on another business journey. Curiosity led them again to the monastery. They looked. There was nobody, only the master was sitting. So they asked that, what is all this? The master said, when the first time you had passed through, you had seen the bigness. They were full of madness, and I encouraged them to bring it out. The next time you passed, they realized, they calmed down. That's why they were sitting silently. There was nothing to do. When third time you passed by, there was no need even to be here. Now they can be silent anywhere in the world. So I have sent them back to the world. I am waiting for a new group. When you will pass next time, again there will be madness. I encourage you to ask. It is to bring your mind out. This will help you to calm down. My answering, in fact, is not any effort to answer your questions. It is an effort to kill them, to murder them. I am not a teacher. I may be a murderer, but I am not a teacher. I'm not teaching you anything. I'm simply destroying your questions. Once all questions are destroyed, your head is cut. I have murdered you. Then you are completely silent, content, absolutely at home. No problem exists. You live life moment to moment. You enjoy. You delight in it moment to moment, no problem exists. I am against metaphysics. But I have to talk about metaphysics. But my whole work is therapeutic. I am not a metaphysician. My work is just like you have a thorn in your feet. I bring another thorn to take the first thorn out of your feet. The first thorn and the second thorn are similar. There exists no qualitative difference. When the first is out, held by the second, we throw both. When I will bring your questions out, I'm not saying that put my answers in the places left vacant by the questions. No. Throw my answers also as you throw your questions. Otherwise, my answers will create troubles for you. Don't carry my answers. They are only therapeutic. They are like thorns. They can be used to bring other thorns out. Then both have to be thrown away. Fourth question. Werner Erhard, a Western yogi, says that problems that you have been trying to change are put up with, clear up in the process of life itself. How does this relate? Are the two incompatible? Erhard is absolutely right. But you can misunderstand him. Because whatsoever he is saying is as profound as anything that Lao Tse can say. You can misunderstand him. Try to understand it. Profoundities are dangerous. And listened by ignorant people, they can become very, very dangerous. Joined by our stupidity, a profoundity can become a very great fall. Yes, this is absolutely right. Problems that you have been trying to change are put up with, clear up in the process of life itself, that's true. A statement of fact. It happens that way. But then the problem arises whether meditation is compatible with it or not. Now your stupidity has come in. Meditation is also part of life. You have to do it as you have to do many other things. Why take meditation as something which is not part of life? Meditation is part of life. You have to pass through that too. You have come to meditation because something in you needed it. Otherwise, why you should come? The whole world has not come to me. Only few people have come to me. I am as available to them as I am available to you. Even people who live in Pune have not come, and you may have crossed the oceans. Something in you, a deep desire for it. Sex only is not life. Food only is not life. Meditation is as much life as anything else. It is your part of life to pass through it. Now, what Erhard says is absolutely true, a statement of fact. Nothing else is needed, one needs only to live. And everything by itself settles. But meditation is also part of life. Yoga is also part of life. One has to pass through it. You cannot escape it. If you try to escape it, that part which you have not fulfilled will always remain a hangover on you. And you will feel that something has remained incomplete. Be courageous and don't escape from anywhere. Wherever your inner life leads you, go. Don't bother where it leads you. Sometimes it will lead you astray, that I know. But to go astray is also part of life. Nobody can always be right. And people who try always to be right die almost absolute failures. Don't be bothered that you may go astray. If life leads you astray, go happily. The energy that leads you astray will bring you back. That sojourn may be a part of the final growth. This is my experience, that in the end one finds that everything fits together. Everything that you did, good and bad, right and wrong, moral, immoral. Whatsoever you did, in the end one finds life is really wonderful, everything fits. And if you look backwards, you would not like to change anything. Because if you change even a part, then the whole will be changed. This is what acceptance is. This is what the Hindu attitude about fate, or the Mohammedan attitude about kismat is. The attitude is only simple, this much, that whatsoever happens, take it as part of your destiny. Move into it. Don't withhold yourself. If you have to err, err. But err totally. If you have to fall, fall. But fall like a drunkard. Completely. Don't resist, because then you miss. If you have to live in darkness, live in darkness, but happily and dancingly. Why be miserable? If you are feeling hell around you, feel it. It may be part of your destiny, part of your growth. Of course, I know, when one passes hell, it is too difficult. That I know, because growth is difficult. When one passes through a problem, a heart-rending problem, a crisis, one wants to escape, one wants not to face it, one wants to be a coward. But that way you will miss something that was going to become a part of the final whole, of the final harmony. If you have lived totally, I don't make any conditions. I say live unconditionally. If your inner voice says you to meditate, meditate. If your inner voice says you to go and drink, then drink and be a drunkard. But be total. Because only through totality one transcends. Only through totality one is transformed. Because only through totality one starts understanding what one is doing. People come to me, they say that they have much anger in them and they would like not to have it anymore. Enough they have had of it and they have suffered much for it. Their whole life has become miserable. And they repent much. Whenever they become angry, they repent much. They again and again try not to be angry. They decide not to be angry. They put their whole willpower to it. But after a few hours, they have forgotten. Again, something happens, a situation, and they are angry. So what to do? I tell them, don't repent. Begin from there. Don't repent. At least that much you can do. Be angry and be totally angry and don't repent. And don't feel sorry for it. You had been angry, accept the fact that you are a man with an angry nature. Okay. Be totally angry, because that repentance is not allowing you to be totally angry. Something is being withheld. That part which remains inside and has not been expressed becomes poisonous, a cancerous growth. It will color all your life, the whole of your life. Be angry. And when you are angry, let the phenomena be such that you can say, I am anger, not angry. Nobody is left behind to look at it. I am anger. it will become a fire, a hell fire. It will be great suffering, but it has to be so. It may be that only once, if you can be really in a hell fire, you become so alert about it that no need to decide against it. The very experience has decided everything. You never go near it again. Not that you take a vow against it. Not that you go to the church and confess and repent. People start enjoying that too. They start indulging in repentance also. I have heard that a woman, for the seventh time, came to the father in the church to confess his sin. Even the father was a little surprised, because it was the same sin again and again that he has made love to a man to whom she is not married. So the father said, "Have you committed the sin seven times or only once?" He said, "Only once." So he said, "Then why you go on confessing it? Already seven times you have." She said, "I love to talk about it. It's so beautiful just to think about it. Even in imagination, confessing to a father, people start indulging in their repentance, confessions. Even they may exaggerate. This has been my feeling. St. Augustine's book, Confessions, seems to be an exaggeration. He seems to be indulging in it. The very idea of committing too many sins seems to be appealing. In India, Gandhi's autobiography seems to be an exaggeration. He goes on talking and talking about his sins. It seems he is enjoying. And now psychologists say that there are people who exaggerate their sins, because then against that background they become great saints, because they have not left ordinary sins. They were so great sinners and now they have become so great saints. The distance is vast and the revolution great. Only a great sinner can be a great saint. How can an ordinary sinner, that you smoke cigarette, do you think you can become an Augustine or a Gandhi just because you smoke cigarette once? Are you looked at a woman and a lust arose in you? That's all. That won't do. It is not enough material. You cannot create a big saint out of a small sins. You have to be a great sinner. So people who write their autobiographies should never be believed. I must have read thousands of autobiographies. But this is my observation, that there exists no other sort of fiction which is more fictitious. Autobiography is the greatest fiction. All autobiographies are fictitious. Either one goes on praising himself or one goes on condemning himself, but both are untrue. Because in both the ways one starts becoming extraordinary. The ego cannot be fulfilled by just being ordinary. Somebody asked Rinchar, that what you do, what is your practice, what is your sadhana? And he said a simple thing. How can you make an autobiography out of it? He said, when I feel hungry, I eat. And when I feel sleepy, I go to sleep. That's all. How can you make an autobiography out of it? And Rinzai would not look a great saint either. Oh, what type of a saint? Rinzai died. His disciple was lecturing in a monastery. A man belonging to the opposite sex stood because he was feeling very jealous. And so many people had come to listen. So he stood and he said, one question, sir. You are talking too much about your master. But a real master is mine. He can do thousands of miracles. I have seen with my own eyes. He was standing on one bank of the river. And it was the time of rains. And the river was flooded. And on another bank, a disciple was standing with a copy in his hand. And my master wrote with the pencil from one bank. And it was written on the other bank on the disciple's copy. Can you say anything about your master? What miracles he did? The disciple said, I know only one miracle that my master used to do, and every day, every minute of it. Silence fell all over the hall. People became curious, what miracle Rinzai has done. And the disciple said that when he felt hungry, he ate. And when he felt sleepy, he slept. That's the only miracle that he did. You will not think it much of a miracle, but it is a very profound phenomena. It means to be natural completely. You are almost fighting. When you feel hungry, you don't eat because thousand and one other things have to be done. When you don't feel hungry, you eat because now is the time to eat. When you feel sleepy, you avoid because there is a dance worth going and seeing, or there is a movie. When you feel sleepy, you are sitting in the movie. When you don't feel sleepy, the movie has excited you too much. Now you are trying to go to sleep and you have to take tranquilizers. To be unnatural has become our natural life. Of course, to be natural is a miracle, the greatest miracle. Just to delight in ordinary things, in eating, sleeping, drinking, the breeze that passes you, enjoying ordinary things, delighting in them, and the whole life becomes a celebration. Your heart is right. He is saying a Laosian thing. Problems that you have been trying to change or put up with, clear up in the process of life itself. Live life. Live in its totality. Move in all its dimensions. Indulge in every dimension. Indulge totally. And in the end you will find everything helped. Everything I say, even the wife that created so much misery for you, even that, even the child that you loved so much and died early, even that, even the business that failed and you became broke, yes, even that. Everything, failure and success, pain and pleasure, right and wrong, going astray and coming back home, everything helps. And out of this chaos arises a harmony. But one has to live it totally. I am not saying that everyone reaches to that harmony. No, that's a possibility. One can reach, one may miss. And people who miss are those people who try hard to reach it. People who attain to it are people who don't bother much to attain it. They simply live moment to moment. That final harmony, that crescendo, is a cumulative effect. So enjoy wherever you are. Be grateful whatever you have. Feel deep gratitude. Let that be your only prayer. Go total wherever you go. If you go to the prostitute, go total. And I know, even to your wife, you have not gone total. Even if you drink wine, drink it totally. And I know you have not even drunk water totally. This incomplete life cannot become a crescendo. This life lived always incomplete, fragmentary, cannot create a harmony. You will die a chaos. That's why you will die always afraid of death. And when death will knock your door, you will tremble, because the life harmony has not been yet achieved and the death has come. You have not lived life and the death has come. You were really incomplete yet. In fact, unborn. And the death has come. You tremble. A man who has lived his life, one who has lived his day, always accepts death beautifully, because there is nothing left that was to be done anymore. He has done all. He has lived all. And he moved in all directions. All that the life could give, he had accumulated in him. He has accumulated the honey of life. Now he is ready to die. There is nothing else. Thousands of flowers have to be visited. Do you know? For one spoonful of honey, a butterfly, a bee, has to visit 5,000 flowers. For one spoonful of honey, 5,000 flowers have to be visited by the bee. For 1 pound of bee, scientists have been measuring, they say, thousands of miles have to be traveled by bees. One spoonful of honey, 5,000 flowers. One spoonful of harmony and 5,000 of experiences, thousands and thousands of experiences. And remember only one thing, wherever you are, be totally there. Otherwise you will visit the flower also and you will come without the honey. And that is the only misery that can happen to a man, and that happens almost to 99% people. You are in such a hurry, just think of a bee in such a hurry, that she goes to the flower but never touches it, because she is in such a hurry to go to another flower, incomplete. She moves to another flower, but by the time she has reached another flower, the idea is a hankering in the mind to go to another. She visits 5,000 or 5 million flowers, comes back empty-handed. Don't be that type of bee. When you visit a flower, really visit it. Forget about all other flowers in the world. There exists none at that moment. Just be a bee. Hum and delight and enjoy the flowers. Be with it as totally as possible. Then you accumulate life's honey. And when you die, You die blissfully, ecstatically. You lived. There is no complaint in your heart, no grudge. And I tell you that if you have lived all moments in their totality, in awareness, at the moment of death, you can bless all your friends, enemies. Yes, your enemies also, because without them also, you would not have been able to reach to this crescendo. They were part of a mysterious phenomena that is life. Fifth question. You once said that in the question lies the answer. So the nature of the question determines the nature of the answer. What is then the most fundamental question the mind can ask? The mind can never ask any fundamental question. Because whatsoever the mind asks is bound to be superficial. When the question arises out of your being, not out of your mind, of course it will not be verbal, it will be existential, you will be the question, then it is fundamental. One Sufi mystic used to come to the mosque every day, and he will stand there, not saying a single word. For years and years, people became curious. Somebody asked, "You never say anything. We have not even seen your lips quivering a little. And we have watched you, observed you closely. We don't feel that even inside you are saying anything. You stand there like a rock. What type of prayer is this?" The mystic said, "Once it happened that a beggar was standing before a palace of an emperor. The emperor came out, he looked at the beggar and he said, 'What do you ask? What do you want?' The beggar said, 'If by looking at me you cannot understand, then there is no need to say. I will go to another house. Look at me naked in cold winter, shivering. Look at my belly. It has joined the back. Look at my limbs. All flesh has disappeared. I am a skeleton. And you ask, what do I want? Is my being here is not enough?' The king became afraid. The beggar was right. Much was given to the beggar. And the mystic said, 'I was passing by the road. From that day I stopped praying.' Because why? To the emperor of the world, what to say? Can't he understand in what misery I am? Have I to say it, assert it? Have I to be articulate with him? If he cannot understand my being, what use it will be to talk? Then it is useless. Either he understands my being, or he cannot understand my language. Silent is my prayer. Unquestioned is my question. Undesired is my desire. It is me. It is my total being. That is fundamental. That is foundational. That is radical. The word radical comes from roots. It comes from the very roots. A radical, a foundational, a fundamental question is never asked by the mind. Mind cannot ask it. Mind is impotent about that. Mind is just like the waves on the ocean. Can you ask me which wave is the deepest? No wave can be, because waves can exist only on the surface. They cannot be in the depth. In the depth there is no wave. Mind is the surface, the waves. All questions raised by mind are superficial. The fundamental question is asked when the mind has been dropped. It is a no mind question. It is a being question. Then you stand with a question, not even verbalized within you, because who will verbalize it? The mind has been put aside. Your whole existence is a question mark. And when that fundamental question is asked, only then the master can give you himself in his totality. He can pour himself into your being. When you ask a superficial question, of course, a fundamental answer cannot be given, because that will fall on deaf ears, on dead hearts. When you ask a question, the quality of the answer is already decided in it. Question, you called us the ancient ones. If we have been with other masters in past lives, how is it possible that we could have missed them so consistently? Because you are very consistent. Be a little inconsistent, otherwise you will miss me also. Seventh question, you said that Lao Tse was born old. How did he achieve his wisdom and maturity? Was a master necessary to bring him to the point where he could be born old? You don't have even a sense of humor. You can't understand a joke. These are just symbolic tales, beautiful in themselves. But if you start asking questions about them, then they become ugly. That's how the whole mystery and the poetry of a thing is lost. And that has been done. The whole theology is all about such nonsense questions. Was Jesus really born out of a virgin? It is a beautiful symbol. Was Jesus really resurrected when he was dead? Crucified. This is a beautiful symbol. Was it a reality that Lao Tse was born old, 84 years old, remained in his mother's womb for 84 years? It is a beautiful Laotian joke. I suspect Lao Tse must have spread the rumor. Nobody else can do that. It is so subtle. If you understand the joke, you understand. If you don't understand, please don't ask questions. Forget about it. Because questions will destroy it completely. It is said that whenever a joke is told, there are three kinds of laughters. First, from those who understand it immediately. And the joke has to be understood immediately with no time gap. Otherwise, you lack the sense of humor. That is the whole point in it. That suddenly it stuck. Suddenly it hits somewhere inside. And you know what it is. You may not be able to explain to others that why you were laughing. And the more you try to explain, the more it will become a puzzle. Why you were laughing? It is a subtle phenomenon. How it happens? When somebody is saying a joke, the joke moves in two levels. That's how the laughter is created. On one level, everything is simple and ordinary, nothing special. Then suddenly there is a turn. At the end, the punchline. At the end, there is suddenly a turn. You never expected that this is going to happen at the end. That's why if you have heard the joke, it is impossible to laugh again. Because then the turn is not there, you already know it. When the sudden turn comes, you never expected, not even a single second before. Everything was going on plain ground and suddenly you are on the Everest. Everything has changed. And the change is so ridiculous, illogical, irrational, that you explode in laughter. If you understand a joke, you understand it immediately without any effort on your part. It is just like Satori or Samadhi. Then there are second type of laughter. These people understand the joke, but a little time gap is needed. Then it touches only their intellect, not their whole being. Their laughter comes, but the laughter is from the lips. Intellectual phenomena. The first laughter is from the belly. The second laughter just from the head. They understood the point, but intellect always takes time. Intellect is not a very quick grasp. Even the most intelligent person is a little stupid, because intellect, its nature is such that it cannot jump. It moves into logical steps. It needs time. It is a progress, a gradual phenomena. Step by step, you reach to the conclusion. That is the second laughter. Pale it will be. Not very deep, not very relaxing, not a catharsis. Just an intellectual phenomena in the head, something clicks, creates little ripples, that's all. But the first laughter is so deep that if really it happens, a joke can become a satori. In that laughter, the mind can disappear completely. Then there is a third kind of laughter. People who laugh because others are laughing. They have not understood, but not to be thought that they are stupid. And they have not understood it. They laugh lastly. Seeing that everybody is laughing, they have to laugh. Mullah Nasruddin went to France once. His wife was with him. And they went to see a comic show. The wife was surprised, because whenever the man, the joker on the stage, will tell a joke or do something, Mullah will laugh so loudly that he will defeat the whole audience. People will start looking at him. And the wife couldn't understand, because she knew well that he doesn't understand French. So she asks, Mullah, I never knew, and I have lived with you for 30 years, that you know French. How do you understand? And why do you laugh so loudly? Mullah said, I trusted the man. He must be saying something. And when Mullah said, one has to laugh, why laugh last? Why not laugh first? And when one has to laugh, one should laugh loudly. And it costs nothing. And I am enjoying myself. This is the third kind of laughter. Nothing is happening to you. It is a pretension. You think that there must have been something humorous. You trust the man, or you trust other people who are laughing. And not to feel stupid, you join in the laughter. This is just a Laotian joke. Nobody can live in the mother's womb for 84 years. Even if Laotse can live, think of the mother also. Laotse may be enlightened and can live, but the mother, poor mother, think of her also. Even 9 months is too much. 84 years. The mother must have been dead long before. No, it is a subtle humor. It says that Laotse was born wise. It is a symbolic thing. From his very childhood he was wise. That is the only meaning. And he was so wise that the rumor spread that he was born old. Jesus was so pure. How can he be born out of carnal desire? He was born out of carnal desire. There is no other way. And life gives no exceptions. He was born out of ordinary love. But the story says something very beautiful. The story is not true, and I say it is true. It is not true as a fact. It is true as a truth. And what is a fact before a truth? A fact is the ordinary facticity of life. No, Jesus' mother was not a virgin. If you go to the ordinary facts, but she was a virgin. Otherwise, how such a pure, such an innocent child can be born out of her? She was virgin. She must have been very, very innocent. Absolutely innocent, as if she never knew any man. That is the meaning. The meaning is as if. As if she never knew what sex is. As if she never knew what ordinary copulation is. But those are as ifs. Once you start forcing that they are facts, you are foolish. And all theologians are foolish. They try to prove that yes, she was a virgin. And God permitted an exception at that moment of history. This is a way to say a certain beautiful thing which cannot be said otherwise. This is just saying that Jesus comes out of a virgin source. Jesus comes out of a pure innocence which has not known any impurity of the world and the body. That's all. But don't insist that it should be explained. Because explanation kills the very spirit of it. the last question. You said that you are merely a presence and cannot do anything. But I and everybody else feel all the time that in your compassion for us, you are influencing us and events to bring us closer to your temple. Is this just our imagination playing tricks? I cannot do anything, but my presence can do. When I say I cannot do anything, I exist within me. The doer is dissolved. So without the doer, how can you do anything? But things happen. And when the doer is dissolved, then tremendous things happen. I cannot claim the authorship of them, or the doership of them. I am not the doer. In fact, I am not. I am just a presence with no label attached to it. Just an opening. Much is possible if you are in my presence, if you allow my presence to move into you, melt into you, become part of you. Much is possible. Even impossible is possible. But I am not the doer. It happens. I am not specifically doing it. I am also a watcher, as you are a watcher. It is happening. If you go to the sun and ask the sun that we are very grateful, you have been destroying darkness on the earth for us so long, the sun will be surprised. The sun will say, I don't know what darkness is. I have never come across. I have never destroyed it. Because how can you destroy a thing you have come never across? But it is happening all the same. Light comes, darkness disappears. If you allow this presence that is here, much is possible, the darkness can disappear. But I am not the doer. I am not forcing anything on you, because that will be a violence. And even if it is not a violence, I cannot do it because the doer is no more there. If you come in me, you will not meet anybody there. The temple is absolutely vacant. And the real temple is always empty. If you find a god sitting inside, then it is a man-made temple. Nothingness is the only temple. Yes, I am not doing anything to you, but much is happening. So don't think that this may be an imagination, because this may be a trick of the mind to think that this is an imagination, because then the mind can close. Thinking that this is an imagination, a projection, this and that, the mind can close and then everything will stop. You don't listen to the mind. While you are with me, don't be with your mind. I am in no mind. The only way to be with me is to be in no mind. And then things happen. Nobody is doing them. They simply happen on their own accord. Sitting silently, quietly with me, and you grow. Nobody is doing anything, neither I nor you. Just sitting silently. The existence within you grows on its own. Enough for today.